This is a Charles Russell Speechlease podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 6 of Retail Recovery, brought to you by Charles Russell Speechlease. My name is Caroline Greenwell. I'm one of the hosts of the series and a senior associate in the Litigation and Dispute Resolution Division at Charles Russell Speechlease. I also head up the firm's consumer brands campaign, so I have a really keen interest in the topic of today's conversation, which will revolve around brand protection, intellectual property, and our long forgotten friend, Brexit. So to discuss these issues, I'm really happy to be joined by Mary Bagnall, Olivia Gray, and David Fifield, who are all experts in this field. I'll just let them introduce themselves before we get going.
Thanks very much, Caroline. Yes, I'm Mary Bagnall. I head up the intellectual property team at Charles Russell Speechlease, and a large part of my practice relates to protection, enforcement, and exploitation of brands, including many household names in the retail, food, and beverage sectors. I will let David and Olivia, who are brand lawyers on the team, just introduce themselves briefly.
Hi, Caroline. This is David, and I'm an associate in the IP litigation team and in the brand protection team, and as well as having an interest in all things in relation to trademarks, I also have a particular interest in relation to issues surrounding designs, protection of designs, and also on the sort of technology side in relation to patents.
And hi, I'm Olivia Gray. I'm a senior associate in the IP litigation team. I work very closely with Mary and David, looking after consumer brands, largely their disputes, but also issues around their strategy for filing and prosecution of their brand.
Fantastic. Thank you all. So the plan for the conversation is to start discussing brand protection more generally to set the scene and to have a think about what warrants protection. We will then turn to the issue in hand and think about the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on the protection of a brand. We'll discuss the challenges that brand owners are facing and the steps that they're taking to overcome those challenges. We'll also think about life after the pandemic, how brands should position themselves and maintain their consumer base and loyalty. And finally, we'll turn your minds back to Brexit and provide some guidance on what, as brands, you should be thinking about during the transitional phase. So, without further ado, Mary, could I turn to you and ask, for those who aren't entirely familiar with what a brand might be interested in protecting, could you give us a rundown on what a brand should seek to protect and why?
Yes, sure. Well, first of all, I mean, every business has got a name. So that's usually where people start off in trying to protect their name. And of course, particularly in this sector, not only is there a business name, but also product brand names and sub-brand names. And all of those are generally advisable to protect for the business. But even before you start thinking about protecting the name, the thing that we need to advise quite often is that searching needs to be undertaken. So you can imagine you don't want to get halfway through producing all your advertising and promotion to launch a new product name and then find out the week beforehand that somebody else has got it. So it's very important to search that you can use the name and that you can protect it to stop other people from using it once you've launched. And this applies not only when you're setting out with a new business, but actually quite relevant now if you're moving from an existing product line into something new that you haven't done already. So for example, perhaps using your name on medical devices where you've never done that before, you might need to check that that's fine to do. And that also applies to moving into different geographical areas. So you need to think about the protection that you need, what you're going to be doing and where you're going to be doing it first. Registered trademarks give fantastic protection. They really are a brilliant IP right, because once they're registered, as long as you can use your trademark and look after it, it will give you exclusivity for the goods and services that it's registered for, not just for the initial 10-year period that you get, but if you keep renewing it, you can renew it indefinitely, and they can last not just decades, but centuries. we act for Cadbury, as you know, and they have got a registered trademark for their name, which dates back to May 1886. this really is a great way of protecting a brand and the sort of first go-to. And registered trademark protection doesn't just protect names, but also it can protect logos, which I'm sure people will be aware of. But also there are slightly more exotic things that relate to the brand that can be protected by registered trademarks, such as colours or shapes, combinations of get-up, like the Lindt Gold Bunny, for example, where you've got a shape and you've got the gold colour and the little ribbon around the neck and so on. And you can have position marks like the Levi's red tab on the back of your jeans could be protected by a registered trademark. But the key thing is that it's distinctive of one business only. So it really has to mean to the consumer that this is Levi's jeans and nobody else's. And that's the distinctive requirement that we need. And usually when you've got non-traditional trademarks like colours and shapes and stuff, you will need to provide evidence that the shape, for example, has become synonymous only with your business. But they are very valuable ways of protecting a brand. Next thing I would say is copyright. Now, copyright can be a little bit forgotten because it's not a registered right in most jurisdictions. It arises when you create something automatically. And so people do sometimes forget it or neglect it until somebody copies their works, that is, and then suddenly it becomes very important. And at that point, we tend to get involved, and it's very good to have your house in order at the outset to enable you to take advantage of it. So what does copyright protect? Well, actually, lots of things. It's original, literary, artistic, dramatic, and musical works. So as long as your work is original, it can protect things like your logos, website design, website content, advertising copy, sound recordings, photos, film, musical jingles, product packaging designs, marketing brochures, and so on. So, I mean, it really does, copyright covers a lot. Even when you just write a letter, there will be copyright in the text of that letter. And computer software counts as a literary work. You don't think, it's not just Charles Dickens, you know, literary works are written works. So computer software counts as a literary work. So that can be protected and often is protected by copyright as long as it's original. The other thing about copyright to remember is that the ownership of copyright is in the creator. So unless there's an agreement that says something different, copyrights automatically vests in the person that creates it. And this can cause problems for brands when they go out to consultants or consultant companies to create logos for them and to create their advertising copy or their web design. And then suddenly somebody copies them and they need to prove that they own it and it's still with the design agency. So it's very important at the outset to make sure that that the ownership's in the right place. And I think Olivia's going to touch on this again a little bit later. And David mentioned that he specialises in protecting designs. That's another area where product designs, for example, particularly can be protected through a range of registered and unregistered rights. They have to be new though, so you have to be very careful not to market products and then suddenly, you know, several months down the line think, oh, can we get a registered design for this, because it might not be possible. So it's very important actually, if you've got an original and unique design for a new product, for example, to take some advice before marketing it. And then finally, again, David mentioned patents. Some brand owners will be able to protect new inventions with a patent, and a patent can give a 20-year monopoly, which again is a very valuable right. You don't need to demonstrate somebody's copied, you just need to show that they are using your invention, your patented invention. Basically, patents cover clever products or processes that solve a problem. So a clever corkscrew, for example, a product closer to my heart. I did once have a case involving a patented process for making vegetable crisps. This was quite some time ago, and when vegetable crisps were a bit of a novelty, there was a real problem with them going soggy. They just couldn't keep them crisp in the bags, and this patented process solved that problem. So there are things in the food and beverage industry and in retail where sometimes patents will be relevant. So there are a variety of IP rights to be considered by brand owners.
That's a fantastic rundown, thank you. Huge amount to think about, but also, if done correctly, a huge amount of protection, of course. So thank you, Mary. So would you say that a brand's intellectual property and the protection of it will be impacted upon directly or indirectly by COVID-19? And how would you say it might be impacted?
Well, yes, I mean, almost certainly it will be impacted by COVID-19, and in two ways, really. I mean, there's an impact through the legal protection process, if you like, and then the sort of the impact on a more commercial level. In relation to the legal protection process, then one of the issues that arises is that you remember I talked a little bit earlier about having to use your trademark within five in order to keep it valid. So you, basically, once it's registered, you have a period of 5 years within which to use it. And the reason for that is so that you've got time when you devise a new product, for example, to get your brand agency thinking about names and logos, your pack designs, putting all your ducks in a row before you launch. And so you're sort of allowed a five-year period where you don't need to be using your trademark. And then after that five-year period has expired, if you still haven't used it, then somebody else can come along and cancel it for non-use. Well, the exception to that cancellation sort of principle is if there are proper reasons for non-use. And you can envisage that there may be brands who were just about to launch when we went into lockdown and who are not able to use their trademarks, and they're up to the five-year period. Does COVID-19 amount to a proper reason for non-use? Well, of course, it's a completely unique situation. And, you know, previous case law has found that commercial excuses, if you like, I didn't have the budget, we were in a recession, that's not enough. It has to be really something quite out of your control. But of course, this is. And so I can envisage that there may be some issues around that. The other thing is that actually, in terms of prosecuting trademarks, is the word we use for basically putting it through its process from filing to registration. There's a process where third parties can object if they've got earlier rights, for example, or if they don't think that the mark is distinctive. And the deadlines in that process are now all being extended by the UK Intellectual Property Office, the EU Intellectual Property Office, and this is a global thing all around the world. These deadlines are being extended. So actually, you don't have to get an extension, you don't have to take advantage of that, you can still plow on with the next step. But if there's an opponent, then they may want to delay. But also, if you're on the receiving end of an objection, it might give you extra time to get your evidence together, gather all your materials, and marshal your defences. So there may be some benefits to extending those deadlines. But I think really that probably the bigger impact relates to how brands cope in the marketplace and the more commercial aspects of the impact of COVID.
Yeah, absolutely. Perhaps then we could move to discussing those kind of commercial challenges that your clients and others around the world are facing, and the steps that they are taking during this period from a brand protection perspective. And I think coming to David for this topic.
Yeah, thank you, Caroline. Yeah, the businesses in the sector are seeing a lot of significant challenges at this time, but there are also a few opportunities for them as well. Mm. I mean, one thing as Mariel, as you mentioned, is there is a trend for businesses, including many well-known brands, to turn their attention to producing new products or providing new services as a result of the pandemic. So we've seen businesses with expertise in engineering, like Dyson, Virgin Aerospace, looking into producing ventilators and other medical equipment, quite different to anything that they're currently known for. We're also seeing groups like the luxury brand owner, LVMH, and others, including a number of gin distilleries and breweries in the UK, like BrewDog, producing hand sanitizer. And of course, a lot of restaurant businesses who can no longer open their premises are converting them to provide delivery services, which they may not have done before. Also, we're seeing things like a lot of reusable face masks being created, in some cases by new small businesses, people working from home and selling via sites like Etsy, but also larger businesses like Vistaprint also producing them. And in the US, Disney's producing a range of face masks for children featuring some of their well-known characters, which I'm sure as soon as they start selling them in the UK, my daughters will be very keen to get their hands on. Now, moving into new business areas like this does present some risks in relation to IP, because although you may have trademark registered for your brand in relation to your core goods and services, you may find that there are other businesses using the same or similar names in relation to products like face masks, gowns, ventilators, equipment like that, which previously there'd been no overlap between your businesses, so weren't a concern. But if you try and move into a new area, you might find yourself at risk of infringing their trademark. So as Mary mentioned, it's always good when you start selling a new product, when you're thinking of providing a new service, just to have a quick clearance check first to make sure that won't cause you any issues with third-party rights. And similarly, there may be issues with infringing registered designs or unregistered design rights owned by others in relation to these sorts of products, or if they have a technical element, even a potential risk of patent infringement. So it's definitely worth carrying out a few checks first before you start investing substantially in relation to new products. But of course, this expansion into new areas also means that business will be producing new designs for products. They also may be coming up with inventions which would be capable of protecting as registered designs or patents. And so it's something that businesses should keep in mind, that when they are expanding to these new areas, that they might want to look into what protection they could be entitled to. For example, we've come across a UK design studio, Bompas and Parr, in conjunction with the Design Museum, has been running a competition for new design concepts in relation to hand sanitizers. And, you know, they've had entries from students, probably people trying out things in their studies while they're stuck at home, but also from businesses. And, you know, those new ideas generated by that competition could well qualify for protection as registered designs or even for patent protection. And it's one thing that it's important for people to bear in mind when they're coming up with things like this, is that particularly with designs and patents, that you need, really ideally, you need to put in your application for protection before you make your new product or concept or technology available to the public. Before you disclose it to anyone outside the bounds of confidentiality. So you want to be speaking to people at an early stage. Otherwise, you run the risk of coming up with a fantastic idea, submitting it to a design competition like the one I mentioned, and find that unfortunately you can no longer protect it via means of a patent, and it turns out to be a great commercial success. You may also, brands, if they're starting to produce human products, might want to look at what their existing trademark registrations cover and potentially file new applications. Although hopefully we'll be able to work our way through the pandemic fairly quickly. Some products may become quite long-term sellers, in which case they're worth protecting. And one issue that we've seen one or two examples of quite recently is where third parties are applying to register quite well-known brands as trademarks in relation to products like face masks, gowns and things like that, to potentially take advantage of a reputation of a brand that might be known in another area of business. And so brand owners will want to be keeping an eye out on trademark applications like that. And many larger brand owners will already have trademark watch services set up, but those watch services might only be looking for applications for their mark or similar marks in relation to the brand owner's core range of products or services, and they might not think about covering things like face masks. So that's worth having a look at. Mary, what sorts of other sorts of challenges are you seeing at the moment?
Well, I think one thing is with brands, of course, if you're not in an area which is able to trade, it's a little bit of a concern that the brand is out of sight and out of mind. And so looking for opportunities to keep your brand at the forefront of consumers in their, you know, so that they are visible in an environment where they're not really trading as normal is a challenge. But actually, a few in the food and beverage industry have managed to do good works, for example, by providing food to the NHS, whilst also keeping their brand visible to consumers and not forgotten about. I mean, Nando's, for example, specifically opened some of its restaurants to provide meals to NHS staff. So even though they weren't generally open, they took the specific step. And of course, it's a very good thing for them to be doing to benefit the world at large. But also, of course, it does help to keep the brand alive. One aspect actually, which might not necessarily leap to mind immediately, is that brands also need to look at their advertising and promotion that may have been devised, you know, long before COVID and the lockdown. So, I mean, Kentucky Fried Chicken is an example. You know that their sort of strap line is finger licking good, and they've got some adverts which show consumers licking their fingers. And of course, that is absolutely not where we want to be at this time. So they very quickly have had to realise that that's now not appropriate, and to pull that particular bit of advertising. So, you know, even if brands are not trading, they need to just be aware of what the marketing that's in the pipeline, to make sure that that's appropriate. We've seen an increase in some counterfeit goods in the medical area, like face masks. And so great care and diligence needs to be taken for brands in those areas. But actually, anecdotally, I was speaking to somebody the other day who said that in some product areas, there's been a reduction in some crime. So, for example, in tobacco products, which are the target of a large amount of smuggling, they've found that that's actually been reduced because everybody's in lockdown, and it's very obvious if you're out there. So actually, funnily enough, there are some strange and unexpected benefits in that the rate of smuggling has gone down a little.
That's an excellent little anecdote. And it's clear that there are some real success stories out there, but I guess we're hearing loud and clear that you've got to be wise to the requirements still. So if you are diversifying, you are trying something different, and you are doing something for the good of the community, there are still various sort of processes and rules that you have to undergo. So yeah, brilliant tales. So I guess sort of changing our focus slightly more future facing. There is obviously going to be a world after COVID-19, and we're obviously looking forward to that. But I wondered if we could just now discuss what your advice would be on how brands should best position themselves for the recovery and that future. I think we'll be hearing from Olivia on this point.
Yes, thanks, Caroline. I think, as we've sort of touched on, for some brands now is a quiet time in respect of trading. But thinking positively, it's a good time to use this downtime to carry out an audit of the brand's current IP protection. So, for example, are there trademarks that aren't sufficiently protected by registrations? Are there marks where their renewal fees are coming up, but actually the mark's no longer in use? Obviously, now's probably not the best time to be incurring costs on extensive trademark or design filing programmes, but it is a good time to think about for when times improve and to plan for. A number of brands might be thinking, for example, about a brand refresh to coincide with the easing of lockdown restrictions. And so brands should be thinking about what protection they need to have in place before launching. And as I think Mary and David both have touched on, that includes obtaining trademark registrations in the necessary territories, but of course carrying out the necessary searches beforehand to make sure there's no issues using those new marks. But it's also important to make sure that the business owns any copyright in any underlying brand materials. So for example, its logos or its marketing material, especially where that's been designed by an external agency. And in fact, it's the case that brands then want to make sure that anything that has been designed for them has been assigned to them. It's always best practice to do this at the time that the work is being done. But in the current climate, there's an increased risk of businesses not being able to continue to trade. And I think as a brand owner, what you don't want to do is find that the brand agency you've commissioned to do your new snazzy logo or your marketing material unfortunately goes under. And therefore, you can't then get your hands on the copyright. It's not going to stop you using the material that's been designed for you, but what it might do is cause difficulties later down the line. For example, if the brand wants to take enforcement action against a third party who's copied this logo or the marketing material, and the brand is actually unable to establish title to the copyright and therefore really struggles to bring the action. I think you've also got to think about the timing of a rebrand, and it's something to think quite carefully about at the best of times, but especially in the current climate. Some of our clients have found themselves on the receiving end of negative social media, in particular for the timing of recent new product launches. Now, of course, these have been in the planning for a number of months pre-COVID, but sometimes this isn't really appreciated by the consumer, and it's just something to bear in mind. So a major brand refresh post-COVID, post-lockdown, but following a large-scale redundancy programme in the business, for example, might not come across very well and could reputationally be quite damaging. And I think as we discussed on one of your earlier podcasts in this series, but on e-commerce, but in my view, a return to our old ways is still some way off. And so I think the new normal is going to see a lot more online trade and focus on the online retail experience. And so I think investing in technology and with it the investment in proprietary software, which will be protected by copyright, I think it's going to be a big growth area for brands.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really clear and helpful advice. And I think we've probably also discussed on one of our other podcasts the sort of reputational element, which is what you've touched on, Olivia, which is really interesting to be sensitive and careful. And you don't want to do yourself any reputational damage as a brand by launching, you know, like you said, something flashy at a really unfortunate time in you know, a world of redundancies and illness. So, yeah, great advice there. To continue on that theme, really, and more generally, I suppose, consumers obviously have an association with their chosen brands, what brands strive towards. And there's a chance, I suppose, that may have become more distant during the period of lockdown. So I wondered if we could touch on any advice that you have for those brands to ensure that they maintain that association and then protect their brand strength from a general or reputational perspective.
I think, as Mary has already mentioned, a number of brands have engaged in some fantastic initiatives. So providing free food to NHS or other key workers, repurposing their production lines to make ventilators or PPE. These aren't only good deeds. They've also got the added benefit of keeping the brand relevant and at the forefront of consumers' minds. Now, of course, a marketeer would have a much better idea of how a brand should maintain its association with its public. I think from a personal perspective, I've very much enjoyed any advert that has tapped into the frustration and sometimes the humour of working remotely, usually based around Wi-Fi connectivity. Of course, thinking about the issue from an IP infringement angle, it's still very important for a brand to continue to police its use, just as they would do under normal trading conditions. So still taking action against third parties that use your trading names that are similar or copyright infringement. In certain areas, there's been an increase in counterfeit goods, I think Mary's already mentioned. So hand sanitizers, there was a big spike in the sale of counterfeit hand sanitizers. And obviously that needs to be cracked down on very quickly. I've also heard there've been COVID phishing scams. So for example, Morrison's and Tesco customers, I think, were sent emails offering vouchers towards the cost of food. But obviously this was just a scam with somebody sort of completely back at home on their computer. So it's of course important to react very quickly to deal with such scams. And in the current climate, I think it's definitely insensible for brands to think about and prioritise certain brand protection measures. So I think thinking where the consumer is going to be most, where things are going to be most visible to the consumer. So things that are very clearly available on social media channels, that should really be a brand's priority. But I think even more so now, because people are in front of their screens more than usual and have, unfortunately, more time on their hands, the risk of a cease and desist letter going viral is definitely on the increase. And I think brand owners have to be quite mindful as to how a letter would be seen if it was seen by their customers or by the public. And also in the current climate, when lots of businesses are sort of pulling together and cooperating, a brand has to think quite carefully about how an aggressive action against a competitor might be seen. Now, that's something we always have in mind anyway when we draft these sort of letters before action for our clients. But especially if the client is a much bigger player and in their market and the infringer is a much smaller outfit. But in the current climate, it's definitely something we're thinking about even more than usual. And also with so many of us now at home for the majority of the time, there's an increase in individuals creating their own content and sharing it online. There's the potential this might infringe the rights of a brand owner. So for example, if someone's created a TikTok video and they use some music in it or they feature the company's logo. But I think a brand owner needs to think quite carefully and keep a measured hat on when dealing with this sort of infringement. And just be conscious of how an overly heavy-handed response could be seen and the potential damage that that might do reputationally. Now, of course, brand owners should be able to and should continue to take action to stop infringement. But there are ways for communicating the message which ensures that the business looks to be reasonable and professional, so that if anything was then shared publicly, brand image isn't damaged.
Yeah, that's a great piece of advice. Again, just sort of adapting to the times we're in, I guess, I think is the sensible approach to take. So this isn't going to be my most seamless of segues, but we are now moving to the topic of Brexit. So we thought it wouldn't be possible to do a brand protection and intellectual property podcast without touching on Brexit. So turning back to David, could you, for us, David, explain the relevance of Brexit to brand protection and give some guidance as to how brands should be navigating the transition if they didn't have enough on their plate with COVID-19?
Yes, certainly, Caroline. Brexit will have quite a profound impact on the protection of brands, in particular in relation to trademarks and designs. And where Brexit took up a lot of our attention for a very long period after the UK's referendum, understandably, businesses' attention has been drawn away from that at the moment. But it is something that it's very important to start planning for now, if businesses haven't started the process already, because it certainly looks likely that the transition period, which has maintained the status quo, will come to an end at the end of this year. Now, the position in relation to intellectual property after the end of the transition period has been partly dealt with through the UK's withdrawal agreement with the EU and existing UK legislation that's been passed in the meantime. But it's likely that it will evolve somewhat as part of the negotiations around the UK's future relationship with the EU. Unfortunately, the UK government's paper on its approach to the negotiations, which was published in February, was quite light on detail in regard to IP. So we'll have to see how that goes. But there are some key points for businesses to bear in mind now. One is that owners of EU registered trademarks and EU registered community designs will be given equivalent UK registered rights when the transition period comes to an end. And that should happen automatically and without the need for them to pay any fees. And the UK registrations will retain the original filing priority and UK seniority dates, and the first renewal dates will be the same as the original EU registration. So there's no immediate need for businesses to rush out and file new UK applications for marks, because they should, if they've got an EU mark already, then they should be given a corresponding UK right at the end of the transition period. And it's worth bearing in mind, though, that if your renewal date for your EU trademark or community registered design falls shortly after the end of the transition period, you will need to separately pay for a renewal of your new UK trademark or UK registered design if you want to maintain it. Another important point is that if applications for EU trademarks or EU registered designs are still pending at the end of the transition period and are only registered after the end of the transition period, then you won't automatically get a corresponding UK registration. There is, however, a 9-month window after the end of the transition period in which trademark and registered design owners will be able to apply for a comparable UK registration, retaining the filing priority and seniority dates of their new EU trademark or EU registered design. But businesses should start now setting reminders for themselves if they've got pending applications, that if that application doesn't proceed to registration before the end of the transition period, that they'll need to file new applications for protection in the UK. So in relation to trademarks, one key impact of Brexit concerns the ongoing validity of EU trademarks, because in order to maintain the validity of an EU trademark, it's necessary to make genuine use of that mark in the course of trade in the EU. And from the end of the transition period, use of a mark in the UK will no longer be considered use in the EU. So, for example, if a business has an EU trademark registration but only uses that mark in the UK, that might be sufficient to maintain the validity of the EU mark now, but that mark will become vulnerable to cancellation for non-use in 5 years after the end of the transition period. Conversely, if a business is trading in the EU but not in the UK and it doesn't use its mark in the UK after the end of the transition period, then the new equivalent UK trademark that it will be given will also become vulnerable to cancellation for non-use. So as a result, businesses trading solely in the UK or that currently aren't trading in the UK might want to look at expanding the geographical scope of their operations, possibly opening some branches in EU member states to try and maintain the validity of their EU-wide rights. Although, of course, the decision to expand into a new market is unlikely to be solely driven on the preservation of IP rights. And certainly in the current climate, businesses are going to be wary about investing in expanding their businesses in that manner. But it's certainly something that's worth keeping in mind. There are a few other key impacts that it's worth mentioning for a retail sector. So currently, we benefit in the UK from a type of protection for designs that's called the EU Community Unregistered Design Right. And this is something, a right that comes into being automatically when you produce a qualifying design that's first made available in the EU. And it lasts for a fairly short period, up to 3 years, so much shorter than a registered design that can last up to 25, but is very useful protection, particularly in the fashion sector where you have a lot of designs being created. A lot of them will only have a relatively short shelf life, so they may not be worth going to the cost of registering for designs, but you still want some protection for them. But at the moment, the UK doesn't have an equivalent form of design right, but the UK has committed to introducing one before the end of the transition period, but it will apply to designs that are first disclosed in the UK. And so there's going to be a detention as to whether you want to first launch your design in the UK or in the EU, or whether some kind of simultaneous launch will be sufficient to satisfy a requirement for first marketing in both the UK for the new UK right and the EU for the EU unregistered design right. That's a question still a little bit up in the air at the moment, unfortunately, but it's worth businesses thinking about now. Another issue is in relation to .eu domain names, which are currently available to individuals and businesses located in the EU. During the transition period, UK businesses have still been able to apply for .eu domain names, but that will be phased out before the end of the transition period. And after the end of the transition period, particularly for corporate groups who have subsidiary companies in EU member states as well as the UK, then they should look at transferring ownership of their .eu domain names to one of their subsidiaries in the EU member state and filing new applications for .eu domain names through them rather than a UK company. Particularly in relation to the food and drink sector, one form of IP right, which doesn't currently exist in the UK, but does in the EU for geographical indications. There aren't too many UK examples, but one is, for example, the traditional Welsh caerphilly as a protected geographical indication. But the UK doesn't have its own national scheme for protecting geographical indications at the moment. But again, this is something that the UK government is meant to be looking into and introducing by the end of the transition period. And this applies to things like food, drink and agricultural products, alcoholic drinks, spirit drinks, wine. The idea is that all existing UK products registered under any of the EU geographical indication schemes by the end of the transition period will remain protected in the UK under the new schemes. And from the 1st of January 2021, all UK geographical indications registered under the EU GI schemes by the end of the transition period continue to receive protection in the EU. But new UK products seeking EU geographical indication protection will need to secure protection under the UK schemes first before they can apply under the EU schemes. Another issue which there have been some question marks around are the status of injunctions which brands may have obtained in relation to their EU-wide EU trademarks and EU registered designs, and what will happen to those after Brexit and the end of the transition period. And that has been a cause for a bit of uncertainty. Now, interestingly, there's been a quite recent UK High Court decision involving a design infringement dispute. And there, it's interesting for a few reasons. One was because the High Court felt that although the UK has now technically left the EU, it's no longer a member state, it still felt that it had the ability to grant an EU-wide injunction in relation to the infringement of an EU-registered design. Now, there's a question mark whether other EU member states would be willing to enforce that injunction, but the English court still thought it had the ability to do so. And the other issue is what happens in relation to where you're, because of course after the end of a transition period, your EU trademark will no longer have effect in the UK. But here the court said, well, also grant an injunction in relation to the future UK registered right that EU trademark owners will be entitled to, which provided some useful clarity for certainly for the claimant in that case. And the government has indicated that if you do have an injunction, an EU-wide injunction in place before the end of the transition period, then you will continue to enjoy an injunction in the UK in relation to your comparable UK trademark, which you should be given following the end of the transition period. However, interestingly, the EU hasn't confirmed that it will recognise pan-EU injunctions that are issued by UK courts prior to the end of the transition period. So we'll have to wait and see on that one.
Fantastic. Really, really useful refresh and actually some good forward-looking advice there that we should probably all turn our minds back to at some stage soon. So seeking to wrap our themes up together, I wondered if we could do a quick whip round for three tips, three takeaways from you guys to organisations in this sector from an IP perspective.
Shall I kick off?
Yeah, go for it, Mary.
I think from my perspective, and we talked about brands not being visible, and a lot of brands will not be operating as a result of COVID or not be operating in the way that they normally would. And I would just say, look at ways in which you can maintain brand visibility so that you're not diluting your brand equity through just not being in the marketplace. And I'm thinking about, you know, embracing technology in that, but looking at different ways of dealing with things. We're seeing people using click and collect, people who haven't traditionally sold online, selling online, and operating under a different model. So just to think about ways that you can maintain visibility, but also to sanity check your existing advertising and promotion that may have been put in place, you know, quite some time ago to make sure that it's still appropriate. And perhaps, you know, if it's not, or even for new campaigns, think about capturing the imagination of the public through clever marketing, which can be run at this peculiar time.
Great. Next up, David.
Yeah, for me, I think if you are a brand owner and you are moving into new product lines, providing new services as a result of a pandemic, then first of all, just, you know, have a quick check to make sure that you're not going to be infringing anyone else's rights first. And also, you know, have a stop and think a little bit about what IP rights you might be entitled to in relation to your new products and services, and apply for those at a very early stage.
Thank you. And Olivia.
I think my top tip is ensure that your brand is in order. The brands that are the best prepared will be the ones that are the best place to thrive as restrictions are further lifted and the economy starts to pick up again.
Fantastic. Thank you all. That was a really, really fascinating session. Hugely relevant and forward thinking as well. So thank you all for your work and your insights there. If there are any thoughts that have been provoked during our conversation or queries, then please do drop us an email at retailrecovery@crslaw.com. Thank you all for joining me today, and thanks ever so much, everyone, for listening.
This is a Charles Russell Speechlease podcast.